I'm sure as we think about our blessings this past year, one of the greatest ones that we can be thankful for is our health. And if we were to think about the blessings that God gives us through our health, right at the top of the list would be our eyesight. And we think about the many blessings that we have daily that we tend to take for granted that comes to us as a result of our eyesight. It is just endless, the things that God brings into our lives, the beauty and the expression on our grandchildren's faces when they open a present. One of the presents that I got that means so much to me is Angie, our daughter, sent us a photo book of pictures of her boys growing up, and that really means a lot to me to be able to see those boys who live so far away from us over in Montana. But the Gospel of John, one of the things that John does in the Gospel of John is to point out the miracles that Jesus did. And he said in the end of the Gospel in John chapter 20 that many other signs truly Jesus did in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe, and that believing you may have life in his name. So in other words, John records for us some of the key miracles that Jesus performed with the purpose of that teaches us to believe in Jesus. And the miracle is there not as an end in itself, but to help us to go beyond the miracle to Jesus himself and to believing in him. It's not surprising that one of these miracles deals with the gift of sight. And in John chapter 9 this morning, we're going to look at that account, beginning with John chapter 9 and verse 1. And as we look at this miracle in John 9 and verse 1, we find that it develops into a lengthy investigation of the miracle. That once the miracle itself was known and being talked about, that the Pharisees wanted to investigate this, and they began to try to sort of go through it with a fine-tooth comb and pick it apart and try to discredit the miracle and to argue that this man is a sinner, and he could not therefore be doing this kind of thing. And we see the faith of the man growing through this process. So it's an interesting account. John chapter 9, giving sight to the blind. And I'd just like to say that there are two types of sight that we are reminded of as we read this account. That there's physical sight, but there's also spiritual sight. And of the two, spiritual eyesight is so much more important than physical eyesight. As important as physical eyesight is, the spiritual sight is what is so much more important. And I can honestly tell you, there's people that are physically blind that see a lot better than the rest of us, oftentimes. And we're blessed to have David Heilman as a part of our family here. And I've known others who were unfortunate to suffer blindness, but did amazing things for the Lord. In London, where my sisters, LaVon and Beth, worshiped for many years, the church there, one of the men there named Peter was born blind, and he preached for many years there in the church. So there's greatness can be done with spiritual sight, even for those that didn't have the blessing of physical sight. But we see Jesus here was concerned about this and showed through his power his ability to heal the blind. We read in John 9 in verse 1, "Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?' And Jesus said, 'Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him.'" Now, the thing that we notice, first of all, here is how that Jesus notices this man, this blind man. And at the particular time when this occurred, it's remarkable that Jesus took the time that he did to stop and help this man. Because coming off the end of chapter 8, Jesus was in a discussion there, and they asked him who he was and so forth. And he made the statement, he said, "Before Abraham was, I am." And they took up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them and passed by. And the very next verse said, "As Jesus was passing by, he saw a man who was blind from birth." So in the context there, you find that Jesus was escaping a group of men that were about ready to stone him to death. And if it were me in that situation, I think my tendency would be to pass right on by this blind man. Because my concern would be more getting away from the other men there that were looking to kill him. And yet Jesus stopped and heals this man. And as he stopped with this man, the disciples bring up this issue that was a probing question among the Jews was, did this man sin or his parents? There was the belief among the Jews that because of the sins of the parents in some way or another, that the children of the second and third generation could suffer the consequences of that. And that was stated in the Old Testament a number of times. The other belief was that if a person, you know, could be guilty of some kind of prenatal sinful act, and therefore maybe this man had done something even in the womb to cause this to happen. But Jesus said, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him." So Jesus laid that to rest in the very beginning here, that don't be thinking that this man or his parents, anything like that. This is so that the works of God can be displayed. Now, most of us have heard of Helen Keller. Helen Keller was born in the 1880s, and she died in, I think, 1968. But she was born deaf and blind. And fact that she was able to learn to speak and to write and the things that she accomplished in her life is a very amazing story. In 1887, when Helen Keller was 6 years old, she was introduced to her teacher, Ann Sullivan. And she began to work with her. And one day, as they were drawing water out of the well, Ann Sullivan had the idea to hold her hand under the water and to spell the letters of water into her hand by tracing the signals. And something clicked at that point, and she began to realize, she's communicating with me. And that was the start of her being able to learn how to communicate in spite of her handicap. So that is just one example of struggling with blindness and deafness and being able to overcome those, that a person is still able to do that in spite of those kind of handicaps. But Jesus is saying here that because of the works of God, this is an opportunity for God to show His power. And He said, I must work the works of Him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. And as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. The point that Jesus is making here is how urgent this is for Him to not miss these opportunities. And the way that He states that here, I must work the works of Him who sent me. Some of the translation that said, we must work the works of Him who sent me. So in a way, this includes all of us, that all of us need to be looking for the opportunity and not wasting the opportunity to be doing the works of God, to be letting the work of God be seen in our lives. We don't have any time to waste, in other words. Jesus said, the night is coming, meaning he knew His death was approaching, when He would no longer be able to do these things. And the same is true for you and I, that we have only so much time in life to be able to teach our loved ones or to teach our children, our grandchildren. There's no time to waste. We need to take advantage of every opportunity that we have with the time that God allows us so that we can be able to accomplish those things before our life is over. After that, we won't be able to do any more along these lines. Paul said in Ephesians chapter 5 that we need to redeem the time because the days are evil. But he said, as long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. So he began to perform this miracle here. Now, healing the blind is a very rare miracle, even in the Bible. You do not find any example of that in the Old Testament. And among the disciples of Jesus, it's virtually the only example, I think, is of Saul of Tarsus, when he was, during the 3 days that he was on the road to Damascus, he was blind, and during that time is when he began to really see the truth about Jesus. But Jesus is the one in the Bible that heals the blind. Several cases of that. And that's significant because in the Old Testament it said that when the Messiah came, one of the things he would do would be to heal the blind, restore the sight. In that day, the deaf shall hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness. So it was a prophecy that when the Messiah would come, one thing that he will do is heal the blind. This should have been a clear message to the people of Israel that when Jesus was healing the blind as he was doing, that it ought to be obvious he is the Messiah. And yet, some of them did not take that to heart. In Luke 4 and verse 16 through 18, he has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed. So it was a signal to the people of Israel that Jesus was the Messiah. And here is a miracle demonstrating that. It said, when he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind with the clay. And he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. And I have to tell you, I was kind of tempted to title this lesson, Here's Mud in Your Eye. But I decided against that. That probably wasn't the best idea. But anyway, Jesus did this miracle in this manner by spitting on the dirt and putting that in this man's eyes and telling him to go and wash his in the pool of Siloam. Well, he was healed at this time. And the result of this was his life was changed. People began immediately to talk about this. In verse 8, therefore the neighbors and those who previously had seen that he was blind said, Is not this he who sat and begged? And some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. He said, I am he. Therefore they said to him, how were your eyes open? He answered and said, a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and I received my sight. Obviously, this miracle had a great impact then on the people around him. They immediately noticed the change in his life. And it is indicating, I think, that when a person is converted to Christ, that spiritually that same thing occurs in that person's life, where right away people begin to notice that your life has been changed. And they will ask you about that. What has happened in your life? It has a great impact when we see the power of God changing a person's life to touch and reach out to impact the lives of many other people. And this man began to share and say, well, this man Jesus is the one that healed me, and here's what he told me to do. And when I went and washed, I was able to see again. But there was the result from this that the Pharisees, when they found out about it, began to attack this miracle, as they had done on other occasions with Jesus. And we see an example here in this passage of the character of unbelief and what happens in the minds of people when they are unwilling to believe the evidence of Jesus. And we sometimes think that, you know, if everyone could just read the Bible, if everyone could just have the opportunity to hear the gospel, that they would respond to it. And it's not necessarily true, because there are people, as we see here, that will look at the evidence and understand the evidence, and then they will set up roadblocks of why they're not going to accept it, why they're not going to believe in spite of the evidence. The first thing that we see in the life of these Pharisees here is that they set up false standards to judge this miracle that had been done. Beginning in verse 13 through 16, it said, they brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees, and now it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees asked him again how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put clay on my eyes and I washed and I see. Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. Others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. So there was a false standard that was set up here by the Pharisees. And the standard was, this man is a sinner because he broke the Sabbath. He does not regard the Sabbath law. And in looking at that, it's a major premise and a minor premise. It's a conclusion that would logically follow if the premises are correct. That here is a man who healed the blind, but he is a man who broke the Sabbath, and therefore he cannot be from God. The response to that would be, is Jesus a man who disobeys the Sabbath, who doesn't respect the Sabbath law? No, Jesus respects the Sabbath. He just doesn't understand the principle in the same way that they have set up this equation. They have created the standard that, to their mind, Jesus doesn't respect the Sabbath. But in fact, Jesus did respect the Sabbath. He did not understand it in the way that they had established this law in their minds, that a man could not do as Jesus had done and heal on the Sabbath. In their mind, by stooping down, by stirring the spittle in the mud and putting it on the eye, Jesus was working on the Sabbath and telling the man to go wash. He was telling him to work on the Sabbath, and therefore it was a violation of the Sabbath. And Jesus had argued that it wasn't a violation of the Sabbath to take your animal out of the ditch on the Sabbath or to help those who were in need. So it was a false argument that they had created to discredit Jesus and the miracle. And we sometimes see that people will do this with the gospel, that even though the gospel is presented to them, they will set up a false standard in their mind. And they will say, well, I cannot believe in a Lord, in Jesus, who would allow his son, or God would allow his son to die on the cross. God would not do that. So they create a false standard, and therefore they discredit Christianity without giving it fair hearing. That is what the Sadducees were doing here. Secondly, there was a lot of bias and intimidation that they began to apply here. They called in the parents here at this point, and they asked them, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? So his parents answered them, he is of age, ask him. He will speak for himself. And his parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore his parents said, he is of age, ask him. So the Pharisees put such a pressure and intimidation on people to frighten them away from believing that Jesus was the Messiah, in spite of all the evidence that he had healed this man from his blindness. Trying to say that if they said that he was the Christ, they would be cast out of the synagogue. The Jews obviously were concerned about their being able to worship in the synagogue and to assemble together, because that was a place of God's people coming together. And for them to be cast out would be a very difficult thing for them to deal with. So they used this type of pressure and bias against Jesus to prejudice the minds of people against him. Thirdly, we see them rejecting the facts of what has happened. It said they called the man again who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner. He answered and said, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see. And then in verse 28, they reviled him and said, you are his disciple. We are Moses' disciples. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he is from. But we see them rejecting the evidence, rejecting the facts of refusing to listen, refusing to believe that Jesus has performed a miracle. And that therefore, if he has performed this type of miracle, he must be from God. In fact, he must be the Messiah. But they reject those facts and aren't willing to accept the truth. Well, we see the man himself growing during this interview process in his commitment to his great credit. You see his courage beginning to grow as he has the conviction to stand by the facts of what has happened. Early on in verse 11, he was speaking about this, and he said that a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said, go wash in the pool. And so I went and washed and I received sight. Down in verse 16, the Pharisees asked him how he received his sight, and he said, he put clay on my eyes and I washed. And they said in verse 17, what do you say about him because he opened your eyes? He said, he is a prophet. Then in verse 25, they said, give glory to God, this man is a sinner. And he said, one thing I know, I was blind, but now I see. And then in verse 31 through 33, he said, now we know that God does not hear sinners. Starting in verse 30, he said, this is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does His will, He hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who is born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. So his conviction is strong. His conviction is standing firm that he believes Jesus must be from God, or he could not have performed this miracle. He's learning to see spiritually as well as physically. In other words, in verse 35, that said that they did cast this man out of the synagogue. Verse 34, his parents more or less passed it over to him and said, let him speak for himself, and he did. So in verse 34, they cast him out. Verse 35, Jesus seeks him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" He answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" And Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. This is an example then of a man going beyond the miracle to finding the truth about Jesus and putting his believing in Jesus in the true sense, being committed to follow him and be his disciple at all cost. But what about the others, the religious leaders who had their eyesight and had their knowledge, supposedly, of God's Word? Verse 39, Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind." Then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, "Are we blind also?" And Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, 'We see,' therefore your sin remains." So here's a choice that they are making to reject the truth, to reject the light. Jesus is the light of the world. And as he had said, that as the light of the world, he who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. But their choice is to reject this light. And therefore, they are in the darkness, in spite of the fact that they claim that they can see. That is why the judgment rests upon them. It's their responsibility to be blind. They choose to be blind to the truth. And it's sad when a person has the opportunity to know the truth and know that Jesus is the Son of God and know that God exists, and they choose not to accept that in their life for one reason or another. The Apostle Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, and he said, "But even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. For we do not preach ourselves, but Christ Jesus the Lord, and ourselves your bondservants for Jesus' sake. For it is the God who commanded light to shine out of darkness, who has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." What he's saying is that when a person chooses to reject Christ, then they reject the light. God has shined this glory of His Son into the world that all may see. But we have a choice to accept that and begin to see that our eyes are opened to the truth. And as wonderful a thing as it would be to be like this blind man, and all of his life he has never seen, And suddenly his eyesight is restored. And now he can see. He can see flowers. He can see colors. He can see all the beauty of God's creation. And yet even greater is when a person has been in the darkness as far as God is concerned, and they begin to hear and understand and accept the truth, their light and their eyesight is opened to all the reality of their sinful condition and how God has sent His Son to save us from sin through His death on the cross. That is the true beauty of being able to have that sight restored so that we can once again see clearly what God means to us and what He has done for us in our lives, so that we will reach out and accept that and be saved from our sins. So much more important than even the blessing of physical sight that we have. So Jesus' miracle here demonstrated His power, and that leads to a choice for each of us to accept His truth and His light, or to choose to turn away from that. And I hope that your choice will be clear, to accept and to obey and to commit your life to the One who is able to restore sight to the blind this morning, Jesus Christ. And we're going to stand and sing the invitation. If you are here today and you have not become a Christian, we urge you to do that today. Jesus said that he that believes and is baptized will be saved. And we extend to you that invitation to come to Jesus this morning, submitting to Him, repenting and being baptized into Christ, that you might be raised to walk in newness of life. Will you come as we stand and as we sing together? My Jesus.